Hi, this is Scott Wilkinson, host of Home Theater Geeks. In episode 364, AVS Forum Associate Editor Mark Henninger and I answer questions from the chat room. So stay tuned.
Netcasts you love.
From people you trust.
This is TWiT.
Bandwidth for Home Theater Geeks is provided by CashFly at CacheFly.com.
This is Home Theater Geeks with Scott Wilkinson, recorded July 27th, 2017. Episode 364, Chat Room Q&A. Hey there, Scott Wilkinson here, the Home Theater Geek and editor of AVSForum.com. This week's guest geek is my cohort, my compatriot at AVS Forum, Associate Editor Mark Henninger. Hey, Mark, welcome back.
Hi, Scott. Thanks for having me on the show again.
You bet. Always happy to have you here. We're going to be taking questions from the chat room today, so by all means, if you're watching live at live.twit.tv, join the chat room or at irc.twit.tv and post questions for us so that we can talk about them and answer them right here on the show. I did get one by email last week before today, so I thought we might start with that. It's from Robert Chase, and he asks, some projectors can do HDR10, high dynamic range, but none can do Dolby Vision. Why is this? Is it to do with the brightness of the lamps in the projectors? I have to say, Dolby keeps a pretty tight rein on its technology. And I would have to say that the first response that comes to mind is there are no high dynamic range specifications or standards for projectors. There are some projectors that can do HDR10, that's true. But the brightness, the peak brightness that you get on the screen depends upon the size of the screen. Also the black level. So, you know, there is no way, unlike a TV, where you can say, oh, this TV can put out 1,000 nits or 500 nits or whatever. You can't do that with a projector. You can say how much light it puts out, but the amount of light that comes back at you depends on the size of the screen. Mark, what's your thought about why we probably don't have any Dolby Vision projectors?
One theory would be just the number sold, that maybe it's not economically viable to incorporate it in the quantities of projectors sold versus the TVs we're seeing it incorporated in. I don't know. Just a theory.
It's a good point because there are very few the projector market as a fraction of the TV market is tiny. It's in the single-digit percentage. So that may be it. Plus, Dolby Vision probably does require a licensing fee. So that's adds some cost to the projector as well.
Yeah, I would like to see it, though, because, the benefit of, okay, so we can't do it with brightness, or at least we can't do it without verifying for the projector that you're getting a certain amount of brightness on the screen, you can map the colors, I guess you could also do that with HDR10, but, the benefit of the dynamic metadata is that adaptability, where you can take that original mastering and try to get the most out of it, regardless of the limitations of the display, clearly there could be some benefit to having it. I've certainly seen a lot of people just ask for it because, they're seeing the growing popularity of the format. Now it's available in Ultra HD Blu-ray as well as streaming. So I think the demand will come, and it may be that you're not seeing it now simply because in projection, the presumption is you're going to be watching a disc. And as you know, the discs literally just came to be in the last month. There's been nothing to watch in
Dolby Vision on disc.
Yeah, exactly.
Now there are, I think, 5 with 3 more coming in September that we know about, and there'll be others certainly.
Yeah. So we should mention don't have I'm sorry. But projectors don't have built-in apps like TVs do. So TVs had that gateway to streaming with Dolby Vision. And all the TVs that support Dolby Vision thus far have basically relied on Vudu primarily for cinematic content. But projectors don't have that. There's no projector.
In their internal apps. Yeah, exactly. Yeah,
so that could that's another reason you might not have seen it.
Good point. And there's only one external streaming box currently that we know of that can do Dolby Vision, and that's the Chromecast Ultra.
Right. And while Roku doesn't only one, and only one Blu-ray player for that matter.
Currently,
Yep. Yeah.
Actually, two if you count it's the Oppo UDP 203 that you're talking about, and if you count the 205, which is the audiophile version of the same player, whether or not you call it a different player, yeah, you do, but it's sort of the same.
Yes, definitely two.
And it's the only one, those are the only ones that'll play Dolby Vision discs at this point. We also have the LG UP970 and the Philips BDP7503 and 7502 and 7302, which are scheduled to get a firmware update.
Maybe if there's 100 movies. Yeah, maybe if there's like a dozen movies or 100 movies. I don't know what the threshold would be, but I'm going with that, actually. That simply the lack of content would not cause a projector maker to jump on it immediately.
Mike Heiss says one reason, $$$$$$ Dolby royalty. Yep, that would certainly be one reason. I should say, while we're on the topic of Dolby Vision, that if you have a chance to go see Dolby Vision, which is now only available on certain TVs and in Dolby cinemas, in commercial cinemas, I do recommend you go see it. Now, with that said, because it's beautiful, it can be the best cinematic experience I've ever seen. That being said, not all movies, all Dolby Vision movies are created equal. And I've seen some that were actually pretty bad. Despicable Me 3 was like, what? That's no better than a standard movie theater. What are you guys doing? My most recent one was Valerian and the City of 1,000 Planets, which in my opinion is a real stinker of a movie. But it's gorgeous, beautiful visuals, and I thought it would be great in Dolby Vision. And they didn't even grade that all that well in Dolby Vision. So, on the other hand, War for the Planet of the Apes, Guardians of the Galaxy Volume 2, those all looked amazing in Dolby Vision. So there's reason to want it at home. I just recently posted a thing on AVS I want to make sure everybody knows before we move on to the next question, called How to Get Dolby Vision at Home. And you need a source. And Mark, you mentioned Vudu. Also, Amazon and Netflix have Dolby Vision content. You need a streamer. You need some way to get that streamed content, either with a Chromecast Ultra or the apps in a compatible TV. There are several Dolby Vision discs now, and you need one of the Oppo Blu-ray player, Ultra HD Blu-ray players. You also, if you have an AV receiver, and this is the thing that people don't often know, if you have an AV receiver in your system or a preamp processor, and you want to feed Dolby Vision through it, it's got to be Dolby Vision compatible, and not all are. So I've put a list in there of Dolby Vision compatible AVRs, and they aren't only the expensive ones. There are plenty of inexpensive ones that do it as well, and that list is growing. Many of them are waiting for a firmware update. A lot of these products are waiting for a firmware update to enable this functionality, and they're saying by the end of the year, which I'm going to say means December. And then there's a list of TVs that are compatible as well, some of which, the Sonys in particular, need a firmware update to become compatible, but they will be. So anyway, that is the answer to that question. Let's see. Compter in the chat room is asking, what are some good 4K projectors in the $2,000 to $3,000 range? Okay, that's a pretty good question. There are some. Mark, do you have any thoughts on that?
I haven't seen the projectors that are 4K that are available at that price. No.
Yeah. There are a few. For example, let's break it down to the projectors that are 4K, right? F-A-U-X, which is basically they have 1080p imagers, and the pixels, each pixel is quickly shifted back and forth, wiggled back and forth between two positions to try and simulate 4K. It doesn't actually even get to 4K even with that, but it, the resolution is higher than 1080p, so they call it 4K or 4K enhanced. Epson calls it 4K enhanced. JVC calls it E-Shift. Now, you're not going to get any JVC projectors in the $2,000 to $3,000 range. The latest Epson is the 4400, Home Cinema 4400, and that, I believe, is $2,200. So that's it right in there. There are some 4K projectors, some actual UHD projectors, one from Optima called the UHD 60. They also have the 65, which is more for custom installers. That uses a Texas Instruments DLP chip, does the same pixel wiggling, but it starts with 4 million pixels on the imager, and the pixel wiggling gets it to 8. Which is where UHD, which is what you need for true UHD. And that thing, the UHD 60, I think is around $2,500. Now, I haven't looked at it yet. I haven't reviewed it yet, but I intend to, because there you're starting to get into some, into a region of price where many more people can afford it. And it does do HDR 10. All of these projectors that I'm talking about now, the Epsons, the JVCs, Optima UHD 60 all do HDR 10. They don't do Dolby Vision, but they do HDR 10. Let's see. Barfel is asking, what do you recommend for HT lighting control? Have you spent much time thinking about lighting control in a home theater? Because that's pretty important, especially for projectors.
Yes, I've done several things. This isn't my projector room, but I painted my walls dark for sure. I rent, so I stapled black sheets to my ceiling so I could have a black ceiling, black rug also, and a black couch. So yeah, as close to blackout as I can get is one thing. And then actually dealing with the lights, I got the Philips Hue smart lighting so that I can have remote control dimming and you know, turning the lights on and off from the seat, which, you know, like $70 or something for a few bulbs and the remote. So that's how I deal with it. Pretty much improvising, like I said, because I'm a renter, but didn't cost much. You know, can of paint, IKEA rug, couple $100, $300 maybe. But yeah, I definitely think about it. Blackout shades also, if I want to watch something during the day. At night, that's not an issue. But yeah, there's nothing, you know, improves the contrast of projection like making the room, you know, as dark and light controlled as possible. So I go as far as I can. And yeah, those are my tricks.
I think the Philips Hue is a great idea because not only can you control it, whether it's on or off or with the dimness, I guess, with a remote, can't you also control the actual color of the light?
Sure. It's a bit more expensive for those bulbs, and you absolutely can. You can create mood lighting. Yeah, you can do...
What I would want to do is, being the total geek that I am, I would want to program in a D65 white so that when the lights were on, it's the same color of white as what I have on my screen.
Yeah, you could pull that off. You just use the app.
You could pull that off.
Yeah, totally.
Yeah. But it would be super geeky. That's super geeky, I know. Oh, here's UJ's got the question of the day. Which TV would you rather have, the LG E7 or the Sony A1E? Both are OLEDs. Both were at the TV shootout. Mark, you saw them side by side. The LG won all three categories. There were three categories this year, voted upon by professionals, as we talked about in detail last week. Dark room, bright room, essentially, and streaming. And the LG won all three, but that's not the end of the story, is it?
No, it's not. I actually would take my chances with the Sony. And, you know, there is a reason for that. And it is pretty much that most content is not perfect. And, you know, so we had a little bit of this discussion last week with Matt Murray about, you know, how are they grading the streaming category or the streaming, you know, vote? And they were, because these were pros, they were like, you know, the Sony mastering monitors and the LG, they are the closest to each other. But on streaming, I actually found the comments about how the Sony processing was reducing noise and reducing banding, that those would actually be pluses to a pro who doesn't want to see the content changed at all, not a plus. But to me, if you're using processing to fix essentially compromised content, the interest is in what that TV's capabilities are. And to take it a step further, I've certainly heard anecdotally that the Sony is especially good at interpreting 1080i footage. And of course, if you're going to watch any kind of cable TV, you know, that's still basically what's being broadcast, that in 720p. So upscaling, yeah, and being able to deal with compromised footage. Anyway, since it's not money out of my pocket, I would take the Sony, because the impression I get. And my number one bugaboo, absolutely number one, is I watch a lot of movies on Vudu, but I do see banding. And it is absolutely true that Sony has processing that mitigates that. And they're the only company that seems to have effectively worked that out. So my particular usage scenario, watching HD movies on Vudu, you queue up the Arrival. It's a mess because of all those gray misty scenes. It becomes banding, you know. So any TV and that happens with other movies, like movies with underwater scenes. I see a lot of that banding. I've appreciated not just on that, but on other Sony TVs, how they're processing. That they have processing that deals with that. So that's me. That's what I would go for. I would give up the quite amazing fidelity that the LG showed for that kind of consumer friendly processing. But I also understand that the TVs were remarkably close in terms of the performance.
The Sony got basically Joel Silver, who was on the show last week, also said that he argued for giving the Sony a quote honorable mention because it was so close to the LG. I think you can't go wrong either way, but I have to agree with you myself that I would choose the Sony because of the processing. And yes, it's not identical to what's on the reference monitor, but for consumers, if it can clean that up, then it's a good thing. That gets to the question of frame interpolation, right? Which is on LCD TVs, and I think it's on the Sony and LG OLEDs as well. That the TV actually, if you take in 24 or 30 frames per second, it will generate new frames, synthesize new frames in between the actual frames coming in on the video signal, in order to smooth out the motion. And it does that, but it also makes the image look more like video. And this is especially a problem when you're watching a 24 frame per second movie. And many people complain bitterly about that, calling it the soap opera effect. And I personally don't mind it that much, but there are plenty of people who do. So all you have to do is turn that off. That's not any big deal. But that is affecting the incoming signal, putting something that wasn't there. Like this processing, you know, where you're denoising, debanding, you know, that arguably could be said to be not in the original signal. But for me, I like the improvement, so I'll take it. Thank you very much.
Yeah, that's a bunch of craziness that I've been paying a lot of attention to. So, of course, the plasma folks will be like, haha, we had motion down, right? 1080p, like whether it's static or not. Now, if you don't use these processing effects on these sample and hold, which is the way that instead of like basically plasma TVs were flashing or strobing the screen really quickly. Yep. And these TVs are scanning from the top and bottom and they're keeping pixels on. In other words, they're not refreshing the pixel continuously. This has impact in terms of, you know, what you see with the motion and you get blurring. So if you don't use those special tricks, these TVs are kind of blurry. You know, you look at a panning photo and it's really clear on a plasma and then it's blurry on these TVs unless you use that interpolation or you use some kind of backlight blinking scanning, which makes the TV dimmer. It was kind of a step backward. I do agree, though, you know, if you judiciously use those controls, then you can bring back the clarity and not make it look artificial. And that's one of the recipes I think that a lot of people look for when they get one of these new flagship TVs that have the processing ability, is they're looking for the formula that doesn't distract them, but does get them that benefit where in fast action you can just see more. And that's what I do. I mean, I mess with it. I'll turn it off sometimes, but sometimes it's just like, you know, you lose too much. I do love, you know, film and good projection because that still doesn't require that basically to get a good experience. Mm-hmm. But TVs seem to need it.
Yeah. Mike Heiss is saying, didn't LG release their Dolby Vision update for the player? Not as far as I know. I recently did this piece that I mentioned about how to get Dolby Vision at home, and I checked all my lists of all the players and devices that are capable or will be with a firmware update. And LG said that, that firmware update is coming. We don't know exactly when yet. My impression is that most of them are going to come pretty much toward the end of the year. Let's see. Chumley said that the Oppo 205, that audiophile Blu-ray player, sold out quick, and it's hard to find. That's amazing, since it's $1,300. The 203 is $550, and that's still expensive for even a UHD Blu-ray player. But the 205 is twice as much. So,
and you know, it's audiophiles are buying it. Those players are gold. I go to high-end audio shows, and it's... I mean, there's few digital sources that are as widely accepted as Oppo Universal Disc Players. I've even seen them modified with big tubes sticking out of them and just...
Really?
Yeah.
Oh, man, modding an Oppo. Chumley said 203, my mistake. Okay, so the 203 is what's hard to find. That makes sense to me.
Okay,
Muchacho asks... Are we any closer to a single HDR format yet? Do you foresee an end to this madness? I don't see it as madness myself. And I think that multiple HDR formats can coexist, just like multiple audio formats coexist and have for a long period of time. You know, we have Dolby Digital, we have DTS, we have Dolby True HD, we have DTS Master Audio, DTS HD Master Audio, and receivers can now deal with them all. So I don't see it as that big a problem. Do you?
Well, it's not a problem with receivers, but you know, something happened with soundbars and soundbars stopped supporting DTS Master Audio when they had Dolby, or I've seen this happen several times. And I think they're assuming you're going to stream everything, so you're just going to get a Dolby Digital or Dolby Digital Plus signal. But if you try to use a Blu-ray player, I mean, there's a usage scenario where, you know, you can convert to PCM in a Blu-ray player and send it, but then if you do that, you can't it won't send out Atmos. So you know, basically what I'm saying is AVR makers have been wonderful about that, and usually they'll ingest just about anything, dozens of two-channel formats and DSD and everything. But as we've moved into soundbars, then there's been some exclusion. And what I would be fearful of is a balkanized market where you have some, you know, manufacturers supporting only part of the ecosystem and other manufacturers only supporting the other part of the ecosystem, and then people have collections that are not, you know, fully cross-compatible from device to device. I wouldn't like to see that at all. But, you know, and that includes online collections. I mean, it's not just like physical media. But I don't think we're any closer to solving it. So I think advocating for universal support and basically critically dinging devices that don't offer it is going to probably be the way forward.
And we were talking again about Dolby Vision devices, many of which need a firmware update to be compatible. And some devices simply aren't going to get that. But then they can just do HDR10 in terms of the two main HDR formats, high dynamic range. So how big a problem is it? I don't know. We also have a couple other formats on the horizon. We have HLG, Hybrid Log Gamma, which is primarily intended for broadcast. Rather than on disk or streaming, prepackaged media, shall we say. So, but, you know, and there are some TVs now that have it. LG is one. Sony will add it, I believe. So when that becomes available with ATSC 3.0, perhaps, I suspect that's probably the HDR format that ATSC 3.0 will use. That's the new upcoming broadcast standard for UHD, but I don't know if it's going to use HLG yet. I don't think that may have been determined, but I haven't heard about it yet. So we shall see. And again, if the TV can do it, fine. If it can't, what's it going to do? Is it going to revert to SDR, or is it just going to try and do what it can and it's going to look really bad? I don't know. I was just reading about Technicolor today with their version of HDR and how one video stream will be able to be played on high dynamic range TVs or standard dynamic range TVs, legacy TVs. But to play it in high dynamic range, will the TV need to get that? I know the LGs are getting that in a firmware update, but I don't know of any others. Meanwhile, Samsung has steadfastly refused to implement Dolby Vision. Instead, they're going for HDR10 Plus, which also adds dynamic metadata, like Dolby Vision, to HDR10. And that should be a better viewing experience, but only Amazon, I think, is providing content in that, and only Samsung TVs can deal with it using their internal apps. Mark, we were talking about internal apps before.
All right.
So it's still the Wild West, if you ask me. We're still in a very early stage of development here, and things are being experimented, and things are just not settled yet, are they?
Oh, not at all. HLG is interesting because if broadcasters actually did go for it, that's quite, you know, quite an adoption there. The streaming guys seem to be going with the support, you know, have a broad tent, you know, or a big umbrella, whatever you want to call it. I don't know. I mean, Samsung's in that pretty position of selling a tremendous number of TVs and being able to chart its own path. You know, there's an argument to be made that Dolby Vision, like Mike Heiss said, you know, they want royalties, and every part of the chain of using Dolby costs a little bit of money. From a creative perspective, it might be more appealing to just work with HDR10, you know, which brings us to the, you know, is HDR10 playback going to get better? Well, yeah, as TVs get more capable and more fully able to render what you do on a mastering monitor at 1,000 nits, because it can put more color and more brightness on screen, you'll actually just get closer to the original intent natively, and not without having to work, you know, make the TV jump through hoops basically to do it. So I wonder how long it'll matter, you know, where at some point we'll just, you know, be able to take a video feed and have a TV, you know, be able to reproduce it properly. I mean, if OLEDs get to 1,000 nits at a reasonably decent window size, then that should be the end of the story, you know, as far as this generation of content goes. And, you know, sure, we'll be racing to 4,000 nits or whatever, but it seems like a lot of content will be at 1,000 nits. And if TVs can just do that without having to jump through hoops, maybe we won't have to worry so much about what exact flavor you've got.
Yeah, exactly right. I think it's important to note that the brightness, the peak brightness at which content is mastered on the mastering monitor, if the consumer monitor can match that, then you're going to see it more or less just like the mastering engineer did. If it can't get that bright, then it's going to use a process called tone mapping, which lets it show brighter and brighter and brighter stuff. But as it reaches its limit, it starts rolling that off. And anything brighter than what its limit is, it can't show anything brighter than that because that's what its limit is. So it has to roll it off and then be satisfied with whatever its peak brightness is. But if the monitor at home and the monitor in the studio can have the same peak brightness capabilities, you shouldn't need tone mapping. And then, yeah, everything would be hunky-dory. I hope that will happen. The Sony X300 broadcast monitor, which was at the shootout, can actually do 1,000 nits. It's an OLED monitor, and it can do 1,000 nits. I don't remember what window size that is, but it's a fair window size, as I recall. Whereas LG and Sony OLEDs only reach 600 nits or so. So if content is mastered to 1,000, then those TVs have to do that tone mapping, that rolling off, in order to show it without hard clipping, which is pretty ugly. So the TV manufacturers work hard to try and do that. But don't forget, as you pointed out, Mark, and rightly so, then we're going to chase 4,000 nits. And then we're going to chase beyond that because the electro-optical transfer function, EOTF, that is being used in both HDR10 and Dolby Vision, it defines what happens, how bright does the picture need to be with a code value of X. That thing goes all the way to 10,000 nits. So we've got, we've got some headroom here, shall we say. And I think people are going to continue to chase that. That's right. Now, will a TV capable of, there are no TVs or even broadcast monitors that can do 10,000 nits, but I suppose we'll get there eventually, maybe with quantum dots. And if we do, are you going to need to wear sunglasses to watch TV? I don't think so.
Well, I was having a conversation with Phil Jones from Sony. And he talked about how those moments in movies where you would use, let's say, 4,000 nits or maybe 10,000 nits, that might represent 5 seconds, 10 seconds, like some sparks in an explosion or right. a moment where right. they showed the sunrise and the camera like panned past the sun. You're not going to
and a small area. You're not going to have the full screen be 10,000 nits.
Yeah, I mean, people might want to think kind of hard about like how much it's worth shooting for that ultimate brightness. I mean, you know, when the vast majority of a viewing experience, let's say on a TV that can get to 1500 or 2000 nits, even if they mastered to 4000 nits, you're going to be like, oh, I'm missing, you know, so much, but you're not. In most likelihood, everything on screen is going to be under 1000 nits, including the highlights for the vast majority of the movie, and a decent TV, So as a rule, those extra bright highlights are not going to be what you're looking at all the time. Not at all.
Yeah. So I totally agree that you don't need to worry about having to wear sunglasses. Everybody, jokes about that, but you really don't need to worry about it. Epony in the chat room is agreeing with a minimum to no processing where possible. And that's the key, where possible. As we were talking about earlier, sometimes the streaming content in particular has got some flaws. And I myself, and Mark, I think you would agree, would want processing to mask those flaws, kind of mitigate them in some way. You might pay a price for it, sure. You know, everything comes at a cost. But I like to see... I'd like to see a TV do a good job of that, which the Sony certainly does.
Yeah, banding and macro blocking, any TV that just does a decent job at that so that you don't get distracted when you're streaming some Netflix, YouTube, whatever. I think that's a plus. Just having it as an option. I mean, you can always turn this stuff off.
You can always turn this stuff off. Well, mostly.
Mostly. You know, I shouldn't have said that. We've certainly seen undefeatable noise reduction and never mind. Yep.
Exactly. Muchacho says regarding the HDR format question, it wouldn't be a problem if all manufacturers supported both formats. It's difficult to make a big purchase if there's a chance you picked the wrong format. Yeah, well, we're as we said, we're in this early Wild West kind of stage, and early adopters do take more risks, I have to say, which is why I applaud them. I love AVS Forum because many of its members are early adopters. They want the latest thing, and they sometimes I think of them as late beta testers, because if they adopt a new technology, they'll find the flaws, and bless them for doing that. Because only because of that can manufacturers then make the improvements and bring prices down for the rest of the world. So I say yay to early adopters, and thank you for taking that risk. Don't you think?
Oh, absolutely. And, the statistic is that 5% of TV buyers are providing 50% of the profits to the manufacturers, and that's all from TVs $1,500 and above. So that is definitely the videophile, movie loving. I own several TVs. I replace my flagship at home, TV every couple of years. Keep up with the tech guys. Yeah, they're driving it. And keep being vocal. Keep telling the manufacturers what you want. Want to see, because they're reading the threads, and they might have their game face on at the shows and be like, but hey, goodbye curves. Curved screens pretty much made a after a couple of years, Scott and I both at CEDIA and CES, I assure you, kept being like, hey, our readers don't want this. Who does want this? Can you please tell us? Yeah. And then they quietly receded.
For the most part, they did. Yeah, exactly. Speaking of which, I just now, and you're getting a scoop here, folks. I just now saw a news item. I'm going to post it on AVS later. That IMAX, speaking of fads and trends and so on, IMAX is looking like they're going to be moving away from 3D. How about that? Chris Nolan, his new movie Dunkirk, which you should, if you haven't seen it yet, you should go read my review on AVS Forum, was played in IMAX theaters. He shot it on IMAX 70mm film, and in some theaters around the country, it's being shown in IMAX 70mm film. But in all cases, in all IMAX theaters, it's being shown in 2D. Now, Chris Nolan, the director, is, shall we say, conservative when it comes to movie making. He doesn't like overhead sound. I've heard it said that he doesn't even like surround sound. And he prefers film over digital. So, he's one of these guys who is keeping the film industry alive. but I imagine he probably doesn't like 3D either. I don't know that for a fact. I'm kind of just guessing. But the fact that this movie is being shown in IMAX theaters only in 2D, whereas most movies, when they're released, big budget movies anyway, are released in 3D in IMAX. And now IMAX is saying, we may start moving away from 3D. I think that's kind of big news.
It's definitely big news. Oh, for sure. Because, losing support for 3D in movie theaters is going to make it tough going. Now, I don't know what James Cameron's plans are for Avatar. If you do look at the list of the top 10 grossing films of all time, he's got a really great track record. So, who knows? Maybe 3D will make a comeback. Maybe IMAX will change its mind again. We don't know. A couple quick thoughts on 3D. I do kind of miss it. And than having it in a TV. And recently I've been using VR gear, and I was reminded, you know, I am reminded that 3D is awesome looking. So it doesn't have to be that interactive environment, but passive 3D, you know, there are still ways to consume it, but not, you know, in a nice at home TV experience. Projectors still have it. So if they're still doing 3D for theaters, then and then hopefully they would keep, you know, releasing Blu-rays. Disney at least has been good about that. I don't know. I guess this is just a bad sign, you know, that they might not be paying as much attention to it. But again,
well,
you know,
the article I saw about IMAX was that their impression is that the audience is kind of speaking. I don't know if that's really true. They're sort of citing that, you know, well, so many people are coming to Dunkirk and you know, we're making, you know, that's a majority of our profits this year, or at least a good chunk of it. And it's in 2D, so the audience must not want 3D. Well, but it's not being offered in 3D. If it were, would they be going to 3D? Maybe they would.
Yeah, that seems like a tough thing to reconcile. Aren't the blockbusters, like you said, all coming out in 3D? I don't know what the numbers are. I don't want to lose 3D.
I don't either. And there are others who don't want it either. Some people do. Barfel wants a 4K 3D OLED 60-inch. Sorry, that's probably not going to happen. Helpless Corgis, more 3D is dying talk. 3D has been dying for years. I feel like it's going to stick around. I do too, at least in theaters, even if IMAX goes away, leads away from it. Certainly, there'll be Real D theaters all over the place that show it. And I don't think it's going away. Oh, yeah. What is your theory?
Well, if you look at the amusement park industry, they've been repurposing roller coasters by putting people, you know, having them wear VR helmets as they're on the ride. Now, remember in the old days of 3D, there would be like, put on your 3D glasses now. Like maybe it was like Nightmare on Elm Street or something. Mm-hmm. I think that there's a room for bringing the VR experience into movie theaters the same way that you would have like a 2D. But then, you know, I mean, I don't know if it'd be too gimmicky, but, you know, it's uncomfortable to wear a VR helmet for like 2 hours. But it wouldn't be so uncomfortable necessarily to put it on for like a 10-minute, you know, experience within a movie. So I don't know if something like that would be part of future entertainment.
You know, that's a good point. That's a good point. I can't imagine. I remember now there were movies where, you know, there was 3D for like a few minutes or 10 minutes or some fraction of the movie. Put on your 3D glasses now. How much further would that take me out of the movie? It would take me out totally. And putting on a giant VR thing?
Sure.
Be even worse.
You know. Yeah, yeah. Well,
The other hand, I have to say that VR, you know, is such an up-and-coming technology that I just recently saw a little promo sizzle reel from Technicolor about how VR and VR storytelling and how that's going to be a new thing, which it is. You've got to think about how you're going to tell a story in VR very differently than how you think about it, how you're going to tell a story on a movie screen. At one time, I thought about, you know, what about having VR just have a movie screen in front of you? Do that instead of having a big screen in your room, put on a VR set. But I think your point about it's not comfortable to wear for 2 hours is a very good point.
Well, they do have, like, Netflix has an app for Gear VR. I've looked at it. It seems silly almost. I mean, I want every pixel I use to show you the screen, you know. Before the VR helmets, I mean, they used to have those you know, personal movie viewer things anyway that were static, and I always wanted to see that sort of taken to the next level, but you know, that's sort of a technology that didn't seem to, you know, really capture people's imagination the way that headphones did. So there's that. So yeah, but back to IMAX dumping that. I mean, really just following a trend because of one movie seems to be folly. As much as Avatar maybe made people go too far towards 3D, you know, what is this? You know, is shooting on film the equivalent to, you know, like I like vinyl now again?
Okay, you know, I mean, great point.
Yeah. Look, I shot film as a professional, and I made the transition to digital, and for a while the convenience of digital was beating film, but you know, eventually the quality of digital started beating film, and today I can't really I look at it, I'm like, that's great and it's romantic, but man, you know, I mean, look Fast and, you know, Fate of the Furious, look at the image quality of that movie. I mean, shoot, you know, I don't care. It's unbelievable, and that's just a fact of modern digital, you know, capture. Mm-hmm. It's incredibly clean and detailed and et cetera. So I don't know if I care about film.
Yeah, yeah. And you, as a professional, you know, you're a videographer, and I didn't know you had shot on film before, though. That's kind of interesting. So you have direct experience comparing the two media, and I think just like audio, where, you know, people for decades would record audio on analog tape, and then we started moving to digital, and at first digital didn't sound very good. And I think what you just said about how digital video didn't look very good at first, but the technology improved in both cases to the point where it now exceeds the capabilities of analog.
Yeah, and you would have to seek the, you know, the artifacts essentially and enjoy them you know, to like it. I mean, you have to kind of, you know, records,
yeah, exactly,
are nice, but there's going to be, you know, you're going to drop the needle. There's going to be a few initial pops. There might be some extra little crackles, you know, between tracks and, you know, so on and so forth.
Going to have a more limited dynamic range.
Yeah.
Yeah, exactly right. Speaking of Avatar, I just wanted to make sure everybody knew that last I heard, there are going to be 4 Avatar sequels. They're already being planned. But the first one isn't going to be out until next year. And James Cameron, of course, is a great advocate of 3D, as we saw in Avatar, and in high frame rate as well. So, you know, will they be in high frame rate? Will they be in 3D? I would guess so. They're already in production now, but they're taking their sweet time about it. 4 sequels. There'll be a 5 Avatar movies when we're done.
Yeah, no, and really, that might be one of the most ambitious movie-making projects that's ever been, you know, embarked on.
Because
of the scale and scope that you know he's going to make them at. And the end result, if things go well for Mr. Cameron, could be that top 10 list of all-time grossing movies, you know, is dominated by him. How?
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
I mean, Avatar.
I'm sure Titanic must be on there.
Yeah, Titanic and Avatar are the top couple movies, as far as I know, or at least in the top 3. So yeah, it's but you know, obviously they're gonna, because Avatar is the record holder, they're gonna trust him with a lot of money, and hope it all works out, because, and it's got to have something to do with 3D. I mean, what's Avatar without 3D?
Exactly. I hope he comes up with some better stories, though. I must admit, I was not real thrilled with the story of Avatar. I mean, it looked gorgeous, no question about it, but I think he could have been a little more creative with the story.
Yes,
No,
I got that. I agree with you 100%, and it's because his ex-wife, Catherine Bigelow, I believe that in his early movies you were seeing her influence in terms of how the characters were constructed. So then, you know, go look at Hurt Locker, which was up against Avatar, I believe, the same year, right? Academy Awards,
so.
And everything. Yeah, that was the strong movie. That's the movie that had the character, you know, and the interplay that you were used to, and the tension from the old James Cameron. I think it's his ex-wife. Anyway.
All right. Well, let's turn to audio here. Hermes is asking, any device recommendations for playing high-resolution audio in a home theater, or are they all essentially equal? What do you think?
I think they're equal. I think they are. I think
sacrilege. Sacrilege. Boy. How dare you say that?
those digital okay, pulses.
Give us a little bit of background on that.
In the strict sense that you said high res audio, well, you know, people are having a very hard time differentiating between CD quality and high res audio. In fact, between 320 kilobit AAC or MP3 and high res audio, but especially CD quality at high res audio. So once you're at high res audio, I think it's so incredibly difficult for people to tell the difference between formats and really that tends to be the case for whatever is putting those bits out. I mean, there's been esoteric arguments about jitter, but it always loops back to, yeah, but is it in the realm of audibility? Well, I'm just giving you an opinion based on what I've read for several years, and my feeling is that you know, if you're getting an asynchronous, you know, USB bitstream, that's your best there, you know, and it doesn't matter what's delivering it because those packets of data are going to arrive and they're going to be decoded, and that's that. But more realistically, the Google Chromecast Audio $35 device, I've been listening to that using the optical output, and it's high-res capable, and I can't tell the difference between that and $1,000 you know, player, DAC, whatever. I don't know. I mean, I'm sorry if, you know, people say I don't have golden ears or whatever, but, you know, I can't measure the difference either. And statistically, people can't, you know, you can't find the difference. So you have to just have faith that there's some difference. And really, I don't have that faith.
Right.
It's a completely right. Now, separate the optical thing if you're... I don't mean to interrupt, sure. But if you're outputting analog, that's a completely separate story. But if you're talking about a source that's going to feed a digital stream to your home theater and it's going to be decoded in your AVR, then really just the challenge is to just get that data to the AVR.
Right. And that's a point I was going to add on to this, which is that it depends very much on your playback equipment. It depends on, in particular, your amplifiers and speakers, and whether or not they can reproduce the frequencies and the dynamic range that is encoded in high-resolution audio. You can get CDs or 96, theoretically, dB of dynamic range, practically speaking, more like 91 or 93. High-res audio, 24-bit, can be 140 dB of dynamic range, but you're never going to hear that unless you've got a super quiet environment. So, for example, high-res audio in a car, that makes absolutely no sense to me whatsoever because you're in a car. You got road noise, even a nice car, you know, a Lexus or a Bentley or whatever you want to put it in, you're still going to have engine noise, a little bit of road noise. It's not going to be recording studio quiet, which is what you really need in order to appreciate the full dynamic range of high-resolution audio. Then there's the frequency response, right? CDs go up to 20 kilohertz, which is certainly higher than I can hear, probably higher even than you can hear, and you're 20 years younger than me.
Oh, totally, yeah.
You know, and high-res audio can go up to 30 kilohertz or more. So you can't hear that, but there are some theories about you can perceive it in some way, but you've got to have equipment that'll reproduce it. And that's going to start getting expensive. I guess not quite so much with headphones. You're in fact, are wearing Hi-Fi Man headphones right now, which I believe go above 20K, don't they?
Oh, yeah. Yeah, sure. They're, I don't know. You know. I don't know what they're rated at, but yeah, as you were saying, I'm my hearing cuts off around 17,500 currently, and it's not going to get better because nobody's hearing gets better.
Nobody's hearing gets better. That's right. And the more we're exposed to, you know, loud sounds, the worse it gets. This is why whenever I go to the movies, I take my measuring equipment and I measure the sound levels, and because I want to see what's going on. And the reference level for movies is, sorry, go ahead.
Oh, well, but you've already spoken to a very real thing, which is even you have to spend a lot of money to get the noise floor in your home theater down to, you know, something like in the 30 decibel range. You know, that's mm-hmm. not easy. And that's your starting point. So, you know, you're 140 decibels, but you've already got 30 decibels, you know, or let's say you have an incredible home theater and you get down to 20, you know, you're mm-hmm. still never going to use it. And probably that CD range is still going to be enough to cover, you know, your reference output levels, you know, without mm-hmm. hearing hiss. So yeah, that's the beauty of high-res audio is that it exceeds what our senses need. It's just abundance. You mm-hmm. know, but anyway, you know, it's similar to HDMI to me. Again, with that source, if it's coming out and it's you'll know if it's not working because you'll hear crackling and popping. It's just working or it isn't. You're not hearing nuances. It's the rest of the system that's putting those nuances in. Like you said, resolution of the speakers, capability of the amps, the acoustics of the room, you know, your own willingness to sit in an ideal location and to find that ideal location. You know, those are the things people should be worrying about, not whether this source or that source sounds fundamentally different, you know, mm-hmm. when it's feeding you that high res.
Which they won't sound fundamentally different is what you're saying, and I have to nah. agree with you. Okay, so regarding headphones, Reverb Mike says, use headphones in a car. You know, I saw a woman wearing headphones in a car, yes, driving a car yesterday. I think it's illegal most places. You have to be able to hear what's going on around you when you're driving a car.
It's legal in New Jersey.
Is it really?
Yeah.
Wow. Marsworm says, Cameron is also looking to reboot the Terminator series when the rights go back to him next year. Well, that'll be interesting, won't it?
Yeah, you know, I just was looking up the Avatars. So it's December 18th, 2020 for the Avatar 2, but it just did come up that, yeah. That
2020? It's not going to come out till 2020?
That's what it says here, December 18th, 2020. That's your Avatar 2, delayed again. Won't be released in 2018. That's a fairly recent article.
Wow.
But anyway, so thank you for mentioning that. I just saw the Terminator news, too. Yeah, that's quite a delay. Wow.
Seriously.
Indeed.
Web 8650. Sorry, go ahead.
Oh, and then they're going to be released annually. In other words, December 18th, December 17th, December 20th, December 19th. Yeah, one year.
Christmas releases year apart. Yep. Starting in 2020. How very interesting. Web 8653 is asking, do either of you choose to watch films or TV shows in any of the headphone surround formats like DTS Headphone X, Dolby Headphone, etc.? And if not, why not? I've heard plenty of, you've heard plenty of interviews on HTG about new surround headphone technologies, but almost zero on real world use beyond demos or reviews. Do they all suck compared to good stereo? What's your experience with headphone virtualization?
It's not very deep. I don't really watch movies, at least with movies. Okay, so, but it's been good with video games, which have been doing that kind of virtualization for some time. So I feel that it's effective, and that if I did watch movies on tablets or laptops, I would use it. But I don't, because I simply don't watch movies that way.
Yeah, if you watch them in your home theater, there's no reason to do it, other than if you want to, you know, keep peace in the family and your partners or kids or whatever are sleeping in the next room, and you want to really crank it up, then that's the way to do it.
Yep.
There's also the issue of comfort. We talked about that a little bit with VR headsets, and, you know, wearing a VR headset for two hours... Certain headphones might get uncomfortable too, but on the other hand, others might not. I mean, the ones you're wearing, I imagine, would remain pretty comfortable.
Yes, really big and open-backed headphones. Your ears don't get hot and there's no pressure on your actual ears. That's one good approach. Or if you get used to the in-ears, which I've gotten used to, and you have good ear tips, like Comply tips, I think are good, then, you know, that's also that's also a comfortable way to go. So, pressure and overheating are the two bugaboos that you want to avoid. And, these are very comfortable, for sure.
Mm-hmm. Epony is asking, can you describe your home entertainment movie audio reproduction? I assume he means your home theater system. And being a reviewer, it like me, it changes a lot.
Sure, it does. It does change. So, right this second, I'm reviewing an Emotiva Basics system. So it's actually inexpensive gear that's running upstairs. Forgive me for not remembering the numerical, the names of the products, but it's the 7-channel home theater Basics amp and their 7-channel Pre-Pro and a system that consists of their Air Motive T1 towers and C1 center and also some of their wall-mounted surrounds and a couple of their S12 basic subs. The video is coming from a Sony VPL VW 365 ES projector, which does do HDR in projector terms. That basically means that it supports the wide color gamut and shows that, because as we've discussed, projectors can't do the highlights that are programmed into home HDR. Of course, it's worth noting that when they grade a movie for Dolby Cinema and the cinematic projected, they're also not grading that for 1,000 nits. Isn't it 100 nits in those theaters? 100 nits,
that's correct.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So
which is
that
still
really
twice as much as a regular theater, but it's still nothing compared to what the brightness you can get at home.
Yep. So what I'm enjoying from that is the big screen. I'm using a Stuart Studio Tech 130. That's 120 inches horizontal. It's 2.40:1 aspect ratio, and I sit pretty close to it so that I can actually get the 4K resolution. And then we're getting that cinematic color, which is in the DCI P3 color space, which is what they're using in movie theaters. So getting the resolution, getting the color, but not necessarily getting that extra highlight detail. That's technically the actual HDR part. I'm getting the rest of UHD out of it. And on other days, I will basically run a Denon receiver and Atmos and so on and so forth. And that also just depends on what system is being reviewed and so on and so forth. So I haven't really had a system I'd call my own in there
in a while now. Yeah.
That's just the reality of it.
Right. Is your Emotiva system Atmos?
No, it's not. It's a 7.2 system. So, the processor doesn't do Atmos. Ah. Although it's, I do have some. I mentioned I rent. So, but I do like actual ceiling Atmos speakers. So I have taken some Klipsch bookshelf speakers and just mounted them right at ceiling height where the ceiling meets the wall and aimed them appropriately and can basically at a flip of a switch just go to the AVR run Atmos instead and basically add it. But there's no dedicated Atmos to that Emotiva system, unlike some other stuff I've dealt with in the past. Right. Like Kef and Klipsch did have that were Atmos enabled speakers and
right. What's your impression of Atmos enabled, meaning up firing and bouncing off the ceiling, as opposed to having real speakers up there?
Well, it's a shades of gray thing. So the good Atmos enabled systems in a room that's amenable to it, where you have the geometry and the seating positions right, and you dial it in properly, it's extremely effective. It doesn't necessarily beat putting ceilings in speakers in the ceiling for various reasons, including that there's leakage that comes from the modules, those modules have to actually play louder than the in-ceiling speakers would, because they have to, the sound has to travel to the ceiling and then bounce off the ceiling and then get to you. So my thought is that, you know, aesthetically it's good. Apartment dwellers, it's good. If you have the right kind of room, it's good. And it can be nice. Like, let's say with ambient effects, I've actually found it can be better, as it were, than the in-ceiling speakers, because you get more of that sense of, you know, just where you're not localizing those in-ceiling speakers. But when it comes to like tracking sounds like bullets or maybe a helicopter flying over your head, I've found that the dedicated in-ceiling speakers are better. And just as a rule, let me just say it. You could put better speakers up in your ceiling than any module I've seen sold. So, you know, if you really get down to brass tacks, you can simply put together a higher performing system without the bounce. So the bounce is a lifestyle choice. It really, if you have the right room and a circumstance that needs it, then I consider it effective. But these days, you're seeing it more and more on soundbars, where you don't have the alternative of in ceiling anything. A soundbar, you got to bounce the sound. And I think we might see the soundbars might start, I suspect, capturing more of that lifestyle, like Atmos. You know, you casually want that capability. You're not, you know, obsessed with having it. If you're obsessed with having it, I think the AVR people will be likely gravitating to the dedicated real speakers up there approach, especially when we get more. You know, receivers that have more. We've been at like four height channels pretty much as a limitation, but this year at Cedia, I think we're going to see an Emotiva RMC1 finally demonstrated for the first time, and with a capacity to do six height channels. I also got a Storm Audio. Yeah, and yesterday I took delivery on a Storm Audio AVR. It's like a $16,000 device, but it's
That's serious.
Yeah, it's serious stuff, and it's going to be my first opportunity to do an array of six height channels. So I'm actually very excited about that. And
cool.
Yeah, definitely. I only have it for a month, but
So enjoy it while you can.
Exactly.
Okay, last question. Hermes is asking: is there any video technology that you're really looking forward to in the future? What would you say to that?
I would like to see I want to see large direct emissive LED movie screens, like the Sony Cletus and like Samsung has recently shown, basically the derivation of the billboards and sports, the commercial displays that have just much finer dot pitch and can bring, you know, the HDR that people are now seeing on home displays, bring that into the theatrical experience. Let us free directors from all the constraints of film. Let us do 120 frames per second. Let's be able to do 1,000 nit highlights Anyway, so I think direct emitting LED screens in movie theaters, that's the technology I want to see evolve.
Yep. I would have to agree with you. That was my first thought as well. Sony Cletus is one, the Samsung Cinema Screen is another, and they've now just installed the first one in a commercial cinema in South Korea, and I'm sure hoping that comes to the U.S., because micro LED, direct emissive technology, I mean, the Cletus, we saw it at CES last January, and oh man, did that look good.
It's just amazing.
Yeah. So I would have to agree, that would be my first choice for video technology I'm really looking forward to. Some people would say, you know, bendable, rollable OLED, certainly a wall size TV, which the Cletus or the Samsung technology micro LED could be. The rollable one, of course, you could roll it up and take it with you. But I think the micro LED is kind of the way to go.
Yeah, that or a home projector that direct laser projection. You know, not laser light source, but laser
projection. Oh, yeah. Okay. Well, there you go. So an RGB laser direct
for home
kind of emission.
Yeah.
Wow. That would be something.
Because those can do ultimate black also, right? I mean, they have that ability, that like an emissive right. display to.
Yep.
Yeah.
Exactly right. You can see that now in Dolby Cinema with Dolby Vision projectors. Also in an IMAX laser theater. They both have direct emitting RGB laser type light sources, and they look phenomenal. Well, listen, we've come to the end of a great hour. Great questions from the chat room. Thank you so much. And thank you, Mark, for being here and helping me answer these questions.
Yeah, good times. Thank you.
Yeah, all good times. you can reach both of us, of course. You can find us at avsforum.com, where we post things as quickly as we possibly can. You can email me always at scott@twit.tv. And you can follow both of us on Twitter at AVS Forum. You can always find previous episodes of Home Theater Geeks right here at twit.tv/HTG and on our YouTube channel, youtube.com/twithometheatergeeks. Next week, my guest geek is scheduled to be Pete Palamaki. He is a consultant and a quantum dot expert. And so we're going to dive deep into quantum dots and nanotechnology as it applies to video displays. So I do hope you will join us for that. Until then, geek out.